Sometimes it's inevitable to give in. Sometimes that's the only way to begin. Sometimes hitting the ground with your face down is the only way. Sometimes that's how you finally feel okay.
Hello and welcome to the Japan Distilled Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Lyman, and it's my absolute pleasure today to be in Aloha Whiskey Bar with owner David Tsuchimoto. He's become very quickly a well-known whiskey expert and bar owner here in Tokyo, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for joining, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
What got you started on your whiskey journey?
I've always been a whiskey drinker, mostly just at clubs or at family outings and things like that. But what really got me into it was when I was working here in Japan as a teacher, a friend of mine from Hawaii asked me to find him some Japanese whiskey. And I thought, oh, why not? You know, my hobby was walking around the city anyway. So he requested Hibiki 17, and I went on this long journey to find Hibiki 17, and I could not find it. So he changed his request to Hakushu 12. And again, I looked and looked and looked, and finally I found it. But I worked so hard to find it that I told my friend I didn't. And I ended up cracking it for myself to see what all the hype was about. And I ended up loving the taste. So it was both the chase and the taste that got me into whiskey.
And you had been a whiskey drinker before, but that was your first journey to becoming an aficionado or an expert. Is that right?
Yes, yes. Because up until that point, I had never bought a bottle for myself. It was either my dad giving me some whiskey or me just ordering whiskey at the bars or restaurants or clubs.
And how long ago was that journey?
I guess when I was a child, he used to drink Johnny Walker Black at dinners, and he would always give me a sip. And you'd think that a child would hate that flavor, but I actually enjoyed it, and I wasn't really put off by it. So it's something that came natural early, but not at an aficionado level.
Sure. And to quote David Wondrich, when in doubt, Johnny Black.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be great every time. So that's a nice one. But when your friend asked you to seek out that bottle of first Hibiki 17 and then Hakushu 12, how long ago was that? When did that exploration begin?
2017.
Okay.
Yes.
And here we are in 2024, early 2024. How many bottles of whiskey do you now own?
That's a hard one. I'd say 1,500 on the low side. I don't know what the high side could be, because every day you search around looking for something in your collection, and then you find something else that you forgot you had. So that's the beauty of it. Also the beauty of getting old.
Yeah, actually, I mentioned to you when I walked in today that it smells like a rickhouse in here. Now, that aroma very quickly receded. I'm not smelling that now because I've gotten accustomed to it. But as soon as I walked in, I smelled wood barrels and whiskey. And it was a really, really unique experience. And I think I've been in other whiskey bars in Japan that probably have similar, if not more, bottles, but they're much larger spaces.
Yes, yes.
And you've got, in this really small room, about 1,500 bottles of whiskey from all over the globe. You clearly specialize in Japanese whiskey, but you've got some of the best scotches I've seen on shelves in a long time, and American whiskeys as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let me clarify. It's not the 1,500 are not only in this bar. There's also my storage place in Saitama and my home here in Ikebukuro. And that's probably another reason why I'm immune to this smell, is because where I live, there is whiskey.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I didn't take the time to count to see how many bottles were here, but it's an impressive collection nonetheless. Now, you started as a fan of the spirit around 2017 when you began your exploration, and now here in 2024, you're a bar owner. What led you from collector to opening a bar?
Mostly due to the fact that I had so many bottles that I worked so hard to find. And my end goal was to taste all of them, but it got unreasonable for me to open them all for myself. So the best option was to open a bar where I could taste everything that I searched for, as well as make a living.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, Japanese whiskey has certainly had a moment globally and here in Japan. I think you're doing a pretty fantastic service for foreign visitors who maybe can't navigate their way through a Japanese bar when only Japanese is spoken, but you now can present an incredible selection of whiskey to people visiting who want to enjoy these amazing spirits.
Yeah, it's been a fun journey. A lot of the foreign, probably 90% of the foreign guests come in here saying, I want to try Japanese whiskey, with the mentality of when in Rome. And, you know, they try other bars, and I think they do well there as well. You know, pointing and showing pictures, just like how my Japanese only speaking customers communicate with me. They just show me a picture of my Instagram and say, I want this.
That makes sense. And I guess here in Tokyo, it is easier to find English speaking bar staff in a lot of places because of the large number of foreigners who live here and also the number of tourists. But down in Kyushu, where I live, it's uncommon to find, especially a knowledgeable bartender who can communicate in another language. So, as I said, I think you're offering a great service here. And the I guess going back, you're family is Japanese, but you were born in the United States. Is that right?
Yes. I'm 100% ethnically Japanese, but I'm far removed from Japan, being fourth generation on my mother's side and second or third generation on my father's side. So despite the way I look, I'm very not Japanese. So I fall into this weird place where I don't fit in with the foreigners in Japan, and I definitely don't fit in with the Japanese in Japan. So it's very strange that I don't really talk outside of working hours, because there's nobody that knows who I am or what I speak or where I come from. So it's a very interesting place, but I like this little bubble that I'm in.
Well, you've created your place, right? This is your home, and people come to you.
Yeah, I'm very lucky, and I don't get homesick too much, because at least once a week there's somebody from Hawaii in here talking with the Hawaiian accent, bringing me Hawaiian snacks. So mahalo to them.
And so when did you move to Japan?
I moved to Japan in 2013. I met a Japanese girl in Hawaii, and she wanted me to move back to Japan with her. So actually the first time me ever coming to Japan was me moving here.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, we didn't work out. 2 months after we moved here together, we broke up. But 2 months was all I needed to fall in love and realize that Japan was where I was going to be, whether it be teaching or something else, for the rest of my life.
It does have a profound impact, I think, on a lot of people who visit. For me, it was as a visitor in 2009. And then I began coming back regularly in 2012. And by 2015, I was looking for an opportunity to move here. So I completely understand that impulse. And it's fantastic that not only could you make that decision so quickly and decide to live in Japan, but that you were able to find an occupation that you love. I think a lot of people come here and they do what they can to survive, and they want to stay here, but they're not necessarily enjoying their jobs. But you've made your own way, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And believe it or not, before doing this bar, I was a teacher, and I love that. It's just that I love whiskey a little bit more.
So now you can teach whiskey.
Yeah.
I guess probably a different age group that you're teaching.
Yes. But start them young.
Well, your father did with you, right?
Yes.
My earliest memory of drinking alcohol was a little bit different than yours. It was a Passover dinner at our local parish. I grew up Catholic, and they served wine with the meal, and it didn't matter what age you were. They were giving you the communal wine. And I didn't realize I was just supposed to have a sip.
Oh.
And that was the first time I ever had a buzz. And my mother got such a kick out of it, because I was tipsy by the time we left church that night. So my first time getting inebriated was in church.
Yes, and it's okay, because it's holy.
That's right. So I guess in addition to your journey here and then opening the bar, and your customers. You've also developed some, I think, really close relationships with some other foreigners here in Tokyo who have embraced Japanese whiskey as a big part of their lives. And I'm speaking specifically of our mutual friend, Max Salmon, who records a lot of his videos for Kanpai Planet here. And of course, our mutual friend, Stefan van Eyken, who wrote Whiskey Rising.
Yes. It's very fortunate that these people are so open. You know, you know who they are. And you build like this big, gigantic personality of how you think they are. And when you finally meet them, you realize they're just deep down at the core, whiskey lovers. And once you have that mutual love for something, then building a relationship around that is very, very simple. And especially with Stefan, he's so generous, not only with sharing whiskey, but just knowledge, just like the way he answers questions I have. Like usually somebody ask a question on a DM or something and they give you a small answer. He'll go in depth. And don't try it yourself, because he has a full-time job as well. But yeah, just the generosity of everything that just blew me away. And for Mac, his acquisition of knowledge is beyond my understanding. I guess coming from an actuarial background in the finance industry, his ability to glean information from the technical side as well as the historical side of whiskey is just mind-boggling. And he retains that and is able to share this information with everybody on the drop of a dime. So these two people, slightly different in personalities, but share the same love for the same spirit.
That's right. And I think they really express themselves in how they communicate in very different ways that reflect their personalities. Mac is a consummate showman and loves to be in front of a camera, in front of a crowd. And he's got this just magnetic personality that just draws people in, and he can make any time out a great time. And Stefan is also just wonderful to hang out with, but he's a much more reserved, soft-spoken gentleman. And again, spending time with him is fantastic. And you're absolutely right. His ability to share knowledge and his willingness to share knowledge is pretty remarkable. I relied on him quite a bit when I was writing The Complete Guide to Japanese Drinks for his knowledge in Japanese whiskey. And his newest edition of Whiskey Rising, I saw it when I came here today. It's the first time I've seen a physical copy of it. It's even beefier than the original, which is saying something, but an absolute must-own book for anybody interested in Japanese whiskey. And then, of course, getting back to Mac with his Kanpai Planet channel, lots of great videos about what's happening in the industry, brands, brand evaluations, tasting notes. He goes to all the festivals and talks about those. So another great resource for people who are interested in getting to know more and more about Japanese whiskey. Of course, when you're in Tokyo, you need to come to Aloha and sample some of David's incredible offerings. So the timing of this interview is actually quite fortunate in that the World Whiskey Forum was just held here in Japan a week or so ago, I guess. And your bar became a gathering place for many of the world's experts in whiskey, which must have been a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, it was a blast. And same thing with how I felt about meeting Stefan for the first time. These giants of the industry come here and you're nervous before they get here, but their love for whiskey, warm personalities, just disarm you immediately, and you feel like you've known them forever. And they come with gifts. And what was very nice was they all wrote me a thank you card before they left, and they all signed it, which was a very, very cool thing. But I guess when you travel with royalty and you're one of the royalty yourself, these small little gestures have a huge resounding impact on people. And I will never forget that.
I can imagine. I rarely experience FOMO anymore, but when I saw your Instagram posts and saw the folks you had in here the other night, I wish that my trip had been a little bit earlier so I could have joined that. That must have been quite a time. Now, both in your own experience, and of course, you also recently attended the Chichibu Matsuri and of course, Ichiro's Malt is their famous brand for their whiskeys. Between those experiences with them visiting for the World Whiskey Forum, visiting the Chichibu Matsuri, and the conversations that you have on an everyday basis. What do you feel like is the potential and perhaps the risks for Japanese whiskey going forward?
These festivals are very frequent nowadays, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, not because more international players are coming in, but because more Japanese distilleries are rising up to fulfill this gap or supply issue. But I think at a certain point, there's going to be too many. And I think we already hit that certain point. So in the future for Japanese whiskey, we'll see some of these younger whiskeys come and go, which is very, very sad. And they're all cool people, and I want to support them all, but it's hard to buy every single Japanese whiskey, or else I'll have a bar full of three-year-old whiskey. So, yeah, I think the cream is going to rise to the top. There'll be kind of a bubble pop, and then we'll start all over again. Like, it seems a little cyclical, even though I've only been in this for maybe a half a rotation, but it seems like looking back at history, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs. So it's a great thing we have more, but it's also worrisome because you build relationships with these people and you want to see them succeed, and you know not all of them can.
That's right. I think there have been cycles throughout history with Japanese whiskey where it's the thing everyone's drinking, and then it's the thing nobody's drinking, and it really bounces back and forth. I think what may be different with the next cycle is that Japanese whiskey now has a global reputation, where in the earlier cycles, it was really mostly consumed domestically. But I think you're right. There's so many new distilleries. It's hard to imagine that all of them are going to find the success that they all are dreaming of. And the last time I saw you was at the Fukuoka Whiskey Festival, Whiskey Stories. And there I was able to try for the first time many of the young whiskeys, these three-year-old whiskeys from a lot of new makers. And they were very uneven. Some of them, you could see the potential. Some of them, you didn't understand what they were trying to do. And so I think you're right, there will be winners and losers. And opening a whiskey distillery is not a small venture. It's a very, very large investment. And I wonder what happens if and when some of these distilleries start to struggle.
Yeah, it's tough. And the new distilleries aren't stopping anytime soon. Every year, every month, you'll hear of a new one coming up. So, but luckily, a lot of them have generational money, and usually a lot of them also are rooted in a different spirit. Sometimes shochu, sometimes nihonshu. So they always have that to fall back on. But yeah, everyone probably wants to succeed.
You're right. The fact that a lot of these are being opened by families with other alcohol interests, I think, certainly helps buffer any struggles they have with the whiskey. I know when the shochu boom happened, there were some distilleries that over leveraged on expanding production, and they now either have so much unused capacity that they're running on skeleton crews, or some of them have actually gone and needed help and bailouts essentially from other alcohol makers or even liquor store chains. So there was a lot of unseen failure, I think, in the shochu industry when that bubble popped, and the same may be true here, which perhaps may open opportunities for foreign investment in some of these distilleries in the future, which I know that generally Japanese alcohol producers have been reluctant to accept.
Well, yeah, we're seeing a lot of that right now, actually.
I know I mentioned earlier that perhaps now that Japanese whiskey has a global reputation, that might soften any risk if Japanese whiskey consumption declines domestically. But it was just reported earlier this month that Japanese whiskey exports declined for the first time in 15 years. So there'd been nonstop growth over a 15-year period, and then the exports dropped. And so, and I know that in the U.S., Japanese whiskey had been continuously climbing, and then last year went flat. And there are, I think, global pressures at work, one being inflation, and another being just a change in how people are drinking. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
I don't know. That seems very curious, because I would think with the weakness of the yen and the strength of the dollar, that they'll have more buying power to buy the product and to for consumers to purchase it. But maybe something that could have stopped this for a little while is people are getting more educated. And there's a lot of these quasi-Japanese whiskeys hitting the market. And they're just, I guess, gun-shy now because they don't want to get burnt for like the third or fourth time. Because there's a lot of whiskey there. My friends shoot pictures to me from California, East Coast, and say, oh, what Japanese whiskey should I get? And I look at the picture and it's like, none of those are Japanese whiskey.
Right.
They sure look like Japanese, but, you know, why isn't that sold here? Like, I've never heard or seen of these distilleries before. So, and maybe they are Japanese, but I'm pretty certain that most of them aren't. And yeah, that's a crazy phenomenon about not buying because they don't want to get fooled.
Right. Well, I think there was a lot of that. Essentially, people who could legally bottle spirits here in Japan, buying and importing foreign whiskeys, blending them and selling those as Japanese with the packaging that looks Japanese. And that's what the labeling standards were intended to address. But here we are 2 years in, and I've seen some change, but not a lot. Now, I believe the deadline for compliance is April of this year. So in just a couple of months, there may be some finger wagging done because they're pretty toothless regulations. There might be some finger wagging towards some of these players, but it's you're right. I think there is a sense that, oh, well, how do I know it's really Japanese?
Yeah. And those regulations are all great, but it's hard if there's no enforcement. There's finger wagging, but there's no actual like fines or anything that could, you know, put fear in these people, because money versus, you know, finger wagging, they're going to take the money. So yeah, I was thinking, you know, it would be awesome if all like the big heads of the big distilleries could get together and maybe create some type of sticker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes money, but they can have their representatives go check out the distilleries. And because if the government doesn't help monitor, why not have the industry itself monitor it, because they're the ones who are going to be affected the most. So have the ones that follow the regulations get these stickers from maybe Suntory or Ichiro's Malt or all the big heads. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a cool way to self-regulate.
I know last time I visited Mexico, the mezcal bottles that were being sold in the official liquor stores, they would have these holographic stickers on the bottles that could not easily be forged, right? You couldn't try to create that on your home printer or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So that might be a way forward for the industry to say, this is Japanese whiskey and it's only Japanese whiskey or approved as Japanese whiskey if it has this specific sticker. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. From the Makers Association or something like that, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Let them self-regulate it. Don't get the government involved if you don't need to. So you're coming up on your fifth anniversary. It must seem like time just flew by, but do you have anything special planned for your fifth anniversary?
No special events as of now, but I plan on bottling 5 independent bottles of whiskey. Those 5 bottles are a secret, and you can find them and their release dates on my Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, all with the same handle, @AlohaWhiskey. And this is the same way you can make reservations if you ever find yourself in Ikebukuro in Tokyo.
Well, I will say that it's worth the trip. No matter where you're staying in Tokyo, you can walk here pretty quickly from the Yamanote line, the circle line that goes around the city. And it's a must visit as far as I'm concerned. When a guest visits Aloha Whiskey for the first time, what can they expect?
Well, I guess what they what they shouldn't expect is a Japanese whiskey bar experience. I'm not going to be here in a tuxedo or a suit with formal movements. It's going to be very, very casual, very, very warm. You can, you know, laugh, have a good time. Well, you could have a good time everywhere, but it's going to be very, very casual because I don't really know how to be a formal bartender. I just know what type of whiskey I have. And if you tell me what you want, I can more or less bring something and give you some options.
I think your the warm hospitality of Hawaii comes through.
Yeah, yeah.
With the experience here, as the name would suggest.
Yes, yes. And some Hawaiian music from time to time. Yeah.
Do you see this as a permanent occupation for you? Do you just plan on running this bar until you decide to retire? Or do you have other plans in the world of whiskey?
Yeah, I have no other plans. Well, I guess I want to do more bottlings, but this whiskey industry is, all my eggs are in this basket. So there's no option. Even if I wanted to do something like, you know, become an accountant or something like that, I couldn't, because everything I have, and I think everything I will have, will be invested in this profession because I love it so much.
Would you ever think about opening an Aloha Whiskey back in the States?
It would be so cool, but I would have my hands tied because I can't bring the cool bottles from Japan over because of, I guess, their three-tier system. Here, that's why Japan has so many great whiskey bars, is because there are no rules. Like, you can bring bottles, friends could bring you bottles from all over the world. You could go to the corner shop and buy a bottle. You could take bottles from your collection and put it all on your back bar. So every bar is going to look different.
Yeah, that is absolutely not allowed in the United States, in any of the 50 states. I guess DC is a little bit looser than most, but I still don't think they'd let you bring in your private collection from Japan. As we wrap up, can you tell me three whiskeys that you're very excited about right now?
Three whiskeys I'm very excited about are, one, Stefan Van Aken's Ghost Series Ichiro's Malt that was available via Stamp Rally. This is ex-bourbon barrel, I believe, finished in an apple saison beer cask. And I get a lot of great whiskeys all week, all month, all year long. And I really like things that are unique and different. And that's one of the whiskeys recently that is very, very different. Another whiskey I'm excited about is a six-year-old Penderin for Boutique Whiskey. I tried a lot of their other stuff and I'm searching for the same flavor, but the amount of fruitiness in this six-year-old whiskey is just astounding. And I love pouring this for customers, because you can just see it in their face when that liquid touches their tongue. And third is always going to be the Yamazaki First Edition 1984, because that's something that, to me, really, really tastes like Japanese whiskey. It's far different than the Yamazaki of today. You taste all these sandalwood, incense notes, as well as like the inside of an old Japanese house. I believe when people ask me what is Japanese whiskey, that's the one. It's Japan in a bottle.
I think if that hasn't convinced our listeners to come visit you when they're in Tokyo, nothing will. I'm salivating as I see these bottles right here in the bar, so you can actually come here and taste them for as long as they exist anyway. Well, David, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Japan Distilled podcast, and we wish you well in everything that you do, and we will visit as often as possible.
Thank you again so much for having me.
Thank you all very much for listening to the Japan Distilled podcast. You can find the notes for this and every episode on japandistilled.com. If you haven't yet rated and reviewed the podcast wherever you listen, please do so. It really helps others find the show. You can reach out to me at Japan Distilled on Instagram or Twitter. I refuse to call it X. And if you haven't already, please consider signing up for our Patreon at www.patreon.com/japandistilled.
Kanpai and aloha.
Kanpai and aloha.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Distilled podcast. This has been Christopher Pellegrini with my co-host Stephen Lyman. Our theme song is Begin Anywhere by the very talented Tomoko Miyata. Audio engineering by the incomparable Rich Pav, who also edits the fantastic Uncanny Japan podcast with Teresa Matsuura. Please give that a listen as well if you're interested in Japanese fables and ghost stories.